Welcome, everybody. Welcome back to the Razzball Fantasy Hockey Podcast. This is Reed, joined by Viz, as always. Viz, it started to heat up here in Buffalo, finally, like 80s yesterday. It was absolutely gorgeous. What wasn't gorgeous, though, is the Pittsburgh defense last night, and holy shit, they got absolutely steamrolled. So I guess let's just jump right into it. Immediate reaction from, well, I guess not immediate, but reaction from the game last night where Pittsburgh just, I'm trying to come up with the right words. It's like they thought the game started at 8:45.
Yeah.
Like it's like they didn't realize that the game actually started at 8 o'clock or 8:07, right, whenever the anthem was done.
I mean, I guess it's kind of weird, but my first thought was basically, how did Washington not beat Pittsburgh?
Same. I have no idea how that's possible.
I mean, we know Fleury stole the series, but even still, with the goalie playing extremely well, you would think they would still have been able to run down the Penguins' defense and just couldn't get it done. It's bizarre to me. Yeah, I mean, a minute in, they're already up, and it just didn't stop. I also loved the tweet from the team's Twitter account after the first period. The boring Ottawa Senators are up 4-0. I mean, when Carlson was on the ice in the first period, they had 14 shot attempts, which is just like
even strength.
Yeah, like that's just completely mind blowing. Like over 60 minutes, it would be like 120 shots, and even the tank Ted Nolan Sabres couldn't even touch that. Like, it's absolutely absurd, and it was completely deserved by them. And now Pittsburgh's at an interesting crossroads. I don't know how much it's going to matter, you know, given the struggles of their defense, but, you know, Fleury gave up 4 goals. Not many of them were really his fault. Maybe the first one, but will Mike Sullivan go back to Matt Murray, or will he stick with Fleury? And which would you do if it was your call?
I'm staying with Marc-Andre Fleury. Like, we just said that he stole the series from Washington, and Washington's a much better team than Ottawa is, and Fleury absolutely stole that series. So it comes, and it's not like the defense was any better for Pittsburgh in that Washington series. I went into the series and I picked Ottawa in 6 because I thought that Pittsburgh's defense was a complete house of cards, and Ottawa had the forward depth to actually exploit it. I also thought that Washington had the superior offensive firepower to exploit Pittsburgh's defense, and they just didn't seem to do it. I have no idea what they were doing in that Game 7, but they didn't. Ottawa has seems like they've looked at that Game 7 tape and said, all right, let's just not play like that. Let's just attack. And wouldn't you know it, the best player on the ice still, as we pretty much all predicted, is Erik Karlsson. And normally the team with the best player on the ice wins the game. Last series for Pittsburgh, best player on the ice was Marc-Andre Fleury. They won the series. Best player on the ice in this series so far is Erik Karlsson. So, like, you can make the argument, yeah, this is the best thing that could have happened for Pittsburgh, because now they're going to get the wake-up call, they're going to come out, they'll probably win game 4, I'm assuming. But
yeah, there's a decent chance. I mean, it's going to be – they're all close to coin flips at this point. It is a tough call. I mean, I would kind of lean towards Murray because he won you the cup last year, and you have a track record of Fleury wilting in the playoffs, you know, outside of the 1 year where they won the cup against Detroit. But I do see, you know, staying with him. He's had 2 bad games out of, what, 15 now? So it's kind of hard to go against them. Yeah, two of the last 5 now, because game 6 against the Capitals was the other dud. But I don't think it's going to make too much of a difference to me. Malkin is getting matched up against CeCe and Phaneuf, and they just have to destroy them. There's no other way around it. Pageau is doing a very good job on Crosby. We talked about it the other day, how Crosby doesn't really look right. But at the end of the day, we know Ottawa's exposed when CeCe and Phaneuf are out there, and it should be a perfect scenario for the Penguins, considering Malkin and Kessel have been, you know, their best offensive players these playoffs. You know, maybe Guentzel too, but they should be destroying them. And, you know, they did have a lot of the play yesterday, even in the first period when they were getting killed and just couldn't buy a goal. You just got to hope that those guys come through, really, because we know the defense is in trouble. And counting on the goaltending, I mean, it's definitely not going to be as good as it's been, so the team just has to improve all around, that's for sure.
Yeah, it's just the defense has just been really lacking for them.
Yeah, it's horrible.
It's like it's really noticeable. You look at the people that are getting the minutes, and it's like, I don't know. Are you sure? Are you sure that's who you want to play?
Right.
Like, just yikes.
Yeah, I mean, yesterday, like, you can't really look at base the minutes on that game because. It was a
that game. That game was over pretty early. Yeah.
Right, but I mean, Dumoulin played 26 minutes in game two, which is fine. I think he's probably the best guy they have left, especially considering Schultz got hurt. But you know, Ron Hainsey playing 25 minutes—that's just not going to end well.
No. They traded for defensive depth at the trade deadline, but they didn't make like.
I mean, this yeah, could, is Mark this straight, is like dead. I don't. He hasn't even been like considered, and I don't know.
This is the crazy thing. I think when Washington traded for Shattenkirk, it kind of threw a wrench into the plans of Pittsburgh. Like now, there goes your top defenseman on the trade market, and what's left? And I think there was a reason why Shattenkirk was so highly coveted because there was nothing behind him in terms of trade value. There was no one behind him, so. You can trade for Ron Hainsey. Would they give up a second for him? You can trade for Mark Streit, which I think they gave up a fourth.
Fourth. It wasn't much. Yeah, I mean, he did play yesterday. It was the first time. Had an assist. I mean, he looked
but
okay. That's not,
but those players aren't the ones that are going to, like, win you games or solidify your blue line. Those are, holy shit, we need to add something because what we have currently isn't any good. So, but is it what we're adding any better? Meh, I don't know, but we need to add something. Well, bam, there, trade.
Right.
Like, those are not going to get it done. And I'm worried if I'm a Penguins fan because their entire, like, playoffs pretty much come down to can the top three forwards, can Kessel, Malkin, Crosby take the series, like, take over the series? And the only one that I've seen that can really do that in these playoffs is Phil Kessel. He's the only player that I can sit there and say, yeah, he's dominated games at a time. Malkin has done good stretches. I don't think Crosby has at all. I think Crosby's been pretty okay in these playoffs. I'm not like enamored by him.
No.
But then I look at like Kessel and Malkin are the ones I think that have to carry it.
Yeah, I mean,
I don't think I think Pageau's been incredibly underrated for Ottawa as a shutdown center who can apparently also score, i.e. the four goals in the game he had against the Rangers last series.
Right, I mean, Malkin does lead the playoffs in points too, but it hasn't been consistently dominating like you would hope for, which I think he can do. He has it in him against, especially if the matchups stay as they are. I think that's where Pittsburgh has to hope for it to turn around is on Malkin and Kessel's back, really. Pageau has done a great job, as we said, and a lot of his minutes, you know, Crosby's minutes are going against Carlson. Carlson's spending a ton of time in the offensive zone. Crosby's not going to score down there. So, I mean, it's working. Basically, everything going to plan, and they're struggling to break the 1-3-1, too. And, I mean, Guy Boucher's not going to change. Even to his detriment in game two, they're down a goal with 5 minutes left, and he's still only having one guy playing high. Pittsburgh's taking their sweet old time, killing the clock, and, you know, that's what Guy Boucher does. And until Pittsburgh tries to figure something out, and it's going to take Ulimata to take his game to another level. It's going to take Justin Schultz. Someone on that blue line is going to have to be making quality breakout passes on a consistent basis, or they're just going to get hemmed in their zone, and you know it's not going to end well when you're going against Erik Karlsson and the depth of forwards that Ottawa has.
Yeah, I'm just Okay, let's just move on to the Nashville, because I don't really have much else to add. Like, you're hitting it on the head. Okay, the Nashville Anaheim series. These games have actually been a little bit entertaining. They already don't like each other. I feel like there's not as much animosity between Ottawa and Pittsburgh as Anaheim Nashville. These teams really don't like each other.
I mean, there's that. I mean, they played last year in the playoffs. It's, you know, the West is generally more of that style anyway. But the other thing is, like, they have, like, Cody McLeod and Jared Bull in the lineup. So they're, like, going to, like, you don't see fights usually at this point unless someone gets scummed or whatever. But it's going to happen when those guys are in the lineup for God knows what reason. So, yeah, I mean, game three, it was just pure domination by Nashville and just couldn't score. And they end up getting the first one. And, I mean, the amazing thing to me is it's a tie game in the last 11 minutes, and Nashville goes up one with, you know, 2:45 left or whatever, and Anaheim doesn't get a shot. Like, how do you go the last 11 minutes without getting a shot? It's just absolutely insane.
Right, there was – Getzlaff wasn't angry, I guess. I don't know. It doesn't make sense.
Like, you don't see domination like that. And both goals were, like, carbon copies of each other where they get a shot through – Gibson has no idea where it is, and there's just a huge net wide open, you know, Forsberg for the first one, Yossi for the second one, on a horrible offensive zone penalty by, I think it was Chris Wagner.
Yes.
I feel like the Ducks probably have to win this game tonight in Nashville, who has, again, they still haven't lost at home. Winning three in a row, the way Nashville's dominating just seems incredibly unlikely.
Yeah, I mean, I said Nashville in six to start the series, so.
Yeah, I feel like that's probably the most likely thing at this point.
Where we're heading, yeah. I'll say this. John Gibson's an absolute warrior. I don't think I've actually seen a goalie take such an absolute beating in one game. Like, how many times did you see Gibson just get run over by Nashville players?
Yeah, I mean,
on goals disallowed.
I mean, I thought the first one was kind of close. The second one was obviously a clear penalty on Ekholm, but yeah, he was getting crushed and, you know, facing four shots doesn't make it any easier, but
I actually felt bad for him. Like, I was like, Jesus Christ, like, you okay, man? Like, oh, like, that's gotta suck. But yeah, he's still staying alive, you know.
Yeah, doing his thing. He's played better in this series, honestly, than he did in the first two. I mean, Calgary series, he had the one game where he was an absolute disaster, and Bernier came in and they came back. Edmonton series, he had his duds. He also obviously had his really good moments too, but, you know, consistently in these three games, even though they were high scoring the first two games, I don't think he gave up any softies. I think he's played very well on the whole, and, you know, that gives Anaheim hope. It just seems like, you know, Kessler is not shutting down the top line like he shut down McDavid at even strength, or Monahan and Goudreau. Monahan was getting a goal a game, but most of it was power play. So if he's not eliminating that top line, you know, that's where Anaheim's had their edge. Now it's a trickier situation. And at the end of the day, it's just those four defensemen are just out of their mind. I mean, he's not really getting talked about because of everyone else, but I think Mattias Ekholm has looked outstanding in his own
right. Yes, he has.
You know, he's not the fantasy producer only because he doesn't get the power play time. He's getting in the playoffs now. But in the regular season, you look at his production and even strength, and it's actually quite good in the level of a number one real-life defenseman, a guy who could make an impact in fantasy. I mean, he finished with, you know, 23 points, but, you know, only three on the power play, got more power play time. The minutes are higher up, too. I mean, he's amazing, and they're not going to have a choice, obviously, but to protect all four of them and
protect less forwards,
but that's okay. I mean,
right. I actually think that they might take a trade. They might look they might consider a trade offer because, don't they get really shady when it comes? Don't they get really thin when it comes to protecting forwards? Like, they'd have to lose somebody good if they're protecting four defensemen.
You protect the top line in Neal, and then, like, are you that worried about losing Craig Smith? I mean, he's been hurt.
Okay, so here you go. Then doesn't that mean Kevin Fiala's gone?
I got to check and see if he's been a pro for 3 years. But, I mean, would Vegas take him given that gruesome injury?
Yes, I absolutely think they would. He was, a top 15 pick?
Yeah.
And he looked good in the playoffs. It's not like for he sure. was just like he looked really good in the playoffs. And players come back from those injuries. I can't believe I'm going to use Steven Stamkos as an example, but like the start of this year he was on fire. Right. And he was coming back from a really bad leg injury. A couple of years ago he was coming back from a bad leg injury and he came back with a vengeance. Like players can come back from these injuries. It's not like this isn't like 2005 NFL where if a guy gets a torn ACL in July, he's done for the year automatically. Like no, they can rehab, they can recover. Modern science has accelerated the process, so on and so forth. And he's a younger kid, so he's going to heal a little bit faster. Like, I think he'll be ready by the start of the season. Like, if Joe Thornton's going to be ready by the start of the season, then fuck, anyone can be ready by the start of the season. So
I don't know. I would bet against that, but I guess it's hard to say. Again, I need to see their list because I think he's been a pro for 3 years now, so they would have to leave him open. But You got Matthias Ekholm locked up for like 5 more years with a cap at 3.75. Like you cannot trade that deal. You're not trading Subban. You're not trading Yossi. So did you trade Ryan Ellis? He would be the one guy, I guess. You know, he's got 2 more years before his UFA, but a cap at only $2.5 million.
Yeah, so that's the thing.
To me, I maybe trade one in the next offseason, but especially if they win the cup, I can't see them making a radical trade like that. I mean, maybe it would, you know, maybe they moved one of them, you know, a Vander Kane type of trade, a player that's, you know, that highly regarded, a JVR and something for one of them. I don't know, maybe.
But so I,
to me, yeah, right. I'm sucking it up and I'm going to say we're going to lose one forward and it's unfortunate, but, you know, I guess that's what you have to do. I don't know.
Do they have to protect James Neal?
No, I mean, they could leave him
open. So I'm trying to think, maybe they don't protect James Neal. Because if I'm looking at which one's more valuable to me, Kevin Fiala or James Neal.
Well, plus Neal's only got 1 year left on his deal, so it does make some sense, too. Yeah, I guess I would just protect him. I mean, you know, if Vegas ends up with, like, Cal Yarncroke, I think they'll be happy, too. So, I mean, they're going to get someone good from Nashville regardless. But to me, the future of the NHL is just defensemen like the Predators have, and having four guys who are like legitimate number ones is just out of this.
It's crazy, crazy.
Especially when you get, you know, Ekholm locked up on that deal. Now again, maybe next year doesn't go that as well, mate, and then you trade Ellis in for more forward help, something along those lines. But I don't know. I couldn't see moving one of those guys at this point. The thought of it just seems crazy because they've cornered the market on it, and it's the key going forward is just, you know, mobile young defensemen. You look at these teams, not many of them have older defensemen. I mean, them and the Ducks, no one's over 30 on the Nashville blue line, and I believe the oldest guy is like 26 or 27 on the Ducks. You know, Senators outside of Mathot and, you know, Pittsburgh, well, they're getting exposed, so that's not really the best case against it. So I think we're going to start seeing that more and more teams is playing younger guys. The ability to skate and make that pass or just skate the puck out of the zone is just such a difference maker. And you see it with Nashville all the time. You know, they just get the puck around the boards, and instead of just gunning it out, you know, they skate it themselves out of the zone, or they make an easy pass and get out of there. And they haven't gone through long stretches at all in any of their games of being hemmed in their own zone, where even, you know, the Ducks, who I said, I think they do have the second best blue line top to bottom in the NHL, but I mean, Nashville's been dominating the puck, and especially in games 1 and 3, Nashville lived in their zone, so I don't know. It's going to be an interesting offseason. I mean, there's so many teams. We're reading reports like the Wild, we've talked about, is a team that's got a ton of questions to answer. They've talked about, Granlund and Nino being possibly one of them available in a trade. Dumba definitely available because of all the guys they have. Scandella, Brodin. I mean, they have a very, very interesting offseason. They're probably, the most interesting out of anyone in terms of they need to make a few trades if they want to avoid losing somebody good. It's not just one,
Yeah, they're the ones of the teams that get hit by the expansion draft the hardest. They're easily the worst.
Right. I mean, the Ducks
They're the
have to
biggest
make,
victims of it.
right. I mean, the Ducks have to move one of these defensemen or at least convince Bieksa to waive his no movement. But even then, you're probably going to lose like Josh Manson. Or it's either, Raquel or Silverberg because they have to protect Perry Getzlaf Kessler. So you want to protect 4D, you only protect four forwards. I mean, it's one of those two are gone. Or if, you do the 7-3, then you're going to probably lose Manson. So them in the Wild for sure are going to take a beating. Is there anything else with these two series at this point?
Not like I still feel comfortable in my predictions of Ottawa in six and Nashville in six.
Right. I mean, now if I could, I probably would switch to Ottawa if I could. But at the end of the day, I'm not too upset about, having Pittsburgh in seven either. I don't. Again, I.
It's not again, not out of the realm of
No, I
possibility.
mean
I just.
Ottawa's. I don't know what would 65% at the most to win the series. Probably about 60% right now, give or take. I mean, it's close. It's not a massive, lopsided situation where I believe like the simulators say like Nashville's like 72% now, given their dominance on home ice so far and just the games in general having the better of it. If you want to get
Yeah,
some tickets,
okay.
read.
Oh, we're going to SeatGeek.
Definitely going to SeatGeek. The NHL playoffs are in full swing. SeatGeek is the smartest, easiest way to get tickets to every game. With SeatGeek's seamless mobile experience, you can buy and sell tickets in just two taps. SeatGeek helps you find the best seats at the best prices, fully guaranteed. There's nothing quite like being there in person, and SeatGeek will get you closer to the action for a great value. SeatGeek saves you time and money by searching multiple ticket sites to compare prices and find amazing deals. And to get the most bang for your buck, SeatGeek grades every ticket based on value to help you immediately identify the best seats that fit your budget. Big green circles, awesome deal. Little red circles, stay the hell away from those tickets. Every purchase fully guaranteed, so you can shop with confidence. And it doesn't end with sports. SeatGeek is concerts, comedy, theater tickets, basically whatever you need. So, best thing is our listeners get $20 off their first SeatGeek purchase. So, just download the SeatGeek app and enter promo code RAZNHL, all caps. That's promo code RAZZNHL, all caps, for $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. So one of the
All right.
commenters, I think it was Saints, asked about five or maybe more, whatever, five players who haven't played the NHL yet that could make an impact, sooner than later. For the sake of simplicity, almost, I'm going to include guys like Clayton Keller, who played a few games at the end of the season. Alex Nylander played, I believe, three games at the end of the year.
Yep.
To me, if you're still rookie eligible,
You count.
I think you count. And these are guys that I could see taking with one of my last couple picks in the draft next year, maybe even a little earlier, depending on how things fall. And, at the least, these guys are going to be great streamers going for it next year already. And within, 2 years, they're all going to be, in my mind, at least on my list, these guys are probably all going to be top 100 fantasy players at some point.
Yeah, do you want to give your list first or should I go?
I mean, we can either go back and forth. I mean, we
All
can
right.
start off just, I think we definitely have two guys the same.
Yes.
And I think they're one and two, depending on, depending on how you feel about, the first two picks in this year's draft. But I think for next year alone, I'd say Clayton Keller and Alex Nylander are probably the top two guys. Nylander, he's going to get all the opportunity to get, you know, offensive zone starts. It'll be interesting to see who the Sabres hire, but I expect
him to play with Eichel or with O'Reilly. He's going to play with one of the two. O'Reilly has looked great in the World Championship so far for Canada.
Eichel can't buy a goal, but he looks really good too. I mean, I'm watching them play now as they're doing this, and they're losing to Finland actually. But my thought would be that Nylander plays with Eichel, and obviously just getting to play with him is massive in its own right, and his shot is outstanding. He's a excellent playmaker, doesn't need the puck on his stick, you know, to have an impact at all times either. So, you know, considering the team situation, I might like Nylander the most. It depends how things shake out, but the worry with Keller is I don't think the Coyotes are going to be any good again, and that plus minus could get pretty ugly again.
Yeah, but here's the thing. I think Clayton Keller is a special talent. I think he is so good. And it's when I see players like Clayton Keller come out for, and he's an American kid, I just sit there and think, you know, maybe there's a future in the Olympics where you have Team USA that might actually have a better roster than Team Canada at some point.
At least be super close, yeah.
Right, because then you look at Matthews, Eichel, Keller. You still have Patrick Kane on the tail end of his career.
Dylan Larkin looks like the player we thought.
Dylan Larkin might be due for a – that's a guy we're going to have to talk about when it comes closer to draft. It could be a huge bounce back here.
Yeah, I think so.
Because to me, it's all about confidence, and he had just none.
Right.
It was like last – I think it was one of those – he didn't play well for the Team North America. He had a bad second half of the rookie year last year,
mm-hmm.
or 2 years ago. So it's one of those, he had no confidence, and now he plays in this tournament, and he looks great. He's putting up points. He's being a playmaker out there. And you could just see it, like, just snowball, and all of a sudden next year he comes out, he puts up 65 points, and you're thrilled to get him because everyone wrote him off as,
exactly.
oh, he was a one-trick pony.
Ranked low because he burned so many people this year. So, yeah, I can definitely see that. I guess the one thing in Keller's favor is just a penalty minute standpoint. Like, he had 26 and 31 games this year, and I don't necessarily expect that going forward. But what we do know is Alex Nylander had 6 penalty minutes in Rochester this year in 65 games and 18 and 57 in the OHL the year before, where a bunch of guys take penalties. So, the penalty minutes aren't going to be there for Nylander, so I guess that is one thing to shift towards Keller. But either way, you know, assuming you know nothing happens with the Sabres and you know they go into the next year with the top six of Eichel, O'Reilly, Okposo, Kane, Reinhart, and Nylander, Nylander at the least is going to be a streamer, but I think he'd be worth taking, you know, with your last pick or two in the draft. I don't think you'd have to go much earlier than that. And to fill him out on your roster, where Keller, oh man, you could rank him even higher too. It really depends because he's a lock for those bigger minutes. They don't really have an alternative, and who knows, like who Arizona's even going to bring back? Like I assume, you know, they'll work out a deal with Verbata to come back, but you're looking at a roster with so many RFAs, Duclair. Burmistrov, who did well when he was there. Even Shane Doan is a UFA. You don't know if he's going to retire or not.
But, it's got to be time for Shane
Doan. I would think so, too. But, I mean, Keller, Domi, Dvorak, like, there's plenty of talent there. They're going to add the 7th pick on the draft, which is really unfortunate for them. But the blue line is shaping up fairly well, too, and that'll help. So, again, Keller's definitely got the upside to be drafted in basically every league, and he might not be a hold the whole season, but he'll be fantasy relevant the whole season.
Yeah, I'm also interested to see what they do with Dylan Strom in Arizona because you want to talk about, I don't want to give the Kyle Turris comparisons, but Like, we all remember the Patrick Kane draft where it was Kane, then JVR were, like, the two big ones. And then Kyle Turris was the Canadian kid because JVR and Kane are American. Everyone was talking about Kyle Turris. He's got so much potential. He's going to go to Arizona. He's going to reinvigorate that franchise. And then just nothing. Just couldn't do it. And it took him how many years to sort of figure it out.
Right.
Yeah, and then
at the end of the day, Strom had over 2 points a game this year in Erie. He's clearly way too good for the NHL.
Okay, all right. I'm gonna say this about the Erie Otters: this year, they had the top 5 point getters in the league on their roster. And you look at their roster. They have like the top prospect from about 7 different teams, just all on Erie. Like, yeah, who do you plan a line with? Alex,
yeah.
DeBrincat, and it was somebody else. It was something ridiculous. And I'm just sitting there thinking, like, Jesus Christ. Like, could that team be any more loaded?
Yeah.
And then you realize that and then you realize that Burmistrov was playing on a line with McDavid when McDavid was in Erie. It's like, oh, well, okay then. Or when Patrick Kane was in London. Burakovsky, sorry. And when Kane was in London, he was on a line with who was it? Sergei? It was one of the Kostiantsins, and somebody else. And I was like, "Holy shit! Like that line is a powerhouse line right there."
I mean,
like,
the team is so broken; it'd be a shock if they don't win the Memorial Cup. But yeah, Strom, you could even put on this list. I mean, you got to think it's going to click for him eventually. He's filled out more now. I mean, he's 6'3", he's a big body. The opportunities there, they don't really have a second center, but you know they have Dvorak, who's looked good, and that's really about it. So he's another guy. The upside is huge, so I could definitely see taking him with the last pick or two in your draft next year, and hoping for the best. The other guy I think who's got big upside is Pierre-Luc Dubois, who was a surprise that Columbus took him 3rd overall last year,
but it's looking like a better decision now.
I mean, he really struggled to start the year, and they traded his team in the Quebec League traded him to a contender. He didn't have the best World Juniors. He had 5 points. He looked okay, but he started to come on at the end of the year where he had 37 points in 28 games for Blainville, where he got traded to. And then 22 points in the playoffs, and in over the 47 games, he had 71 penalty minutes. That's the thing. He's had 112 penalty minutes in a year. Like, he could chip in big penalty minute totals too, which is a nice little bonus if you do take him. We have to really see, like, one, that he's going to make their team next year, but I feel pretty safe about that. But where he slots into the lineup, because Torts moves guys around a lot. Like, even, a personal favorite of mine is Oliver Bjorkstrand. He bounced off between first power play unit and in the second line, then down to the third line and barely playing on the power play. And Dubois is a rookie, and Torts will bench him if he does something dumb too. That's just how Torts is. So there, it's no guarantee, but the upside for Dubois might even be bigger than Keller and Nylander, which is obviously saying a lot. I don't know if I necessarily agree with that, but you can definitely make the argument, and there's potential there for a superstar, and there's no doubt in my mind about that.
Yeah, I didn't have Pierre-Luc Dubois on my list, but I can't argue with him being on a list. I think I was at the draft in Buffalo when they took him over Jesse Puljujärvi, and I remember thinking, oh my god, like, what is Columbus doing? Puljujärvi just could not figure it out for Edmonton. And the crazy thing is, the draft was seen as there was a big three. It was Matthews, Laine, Puljujärvi. Like, everyone knew it was those three and then the other players. And then when Columbus broke that by taking Dubois over Puljujärvi, I was like, okay. Like, that seems like a terrible decision. Puljujärvi couldn't figure it out in Edmonton, just couldn't get in the lineup, couldn't produce.
Yeah.
Goes to Oklahoma.
In Finland.
Yeah, and now he's getting scratched with Finland, and he doesn't. Like, it's starting to wonder. Like, did was he like all he was made out to be, or was it because Line A was so good with him that it made him look better? I think that's an interesting. I think it's a difficult thing to assess, and that's why when you look at the Erie Otters, when you look at like DeBrincat and all of these like players, say on Erie for example, they're all playing with just absolute studs. It's like, okay, well, how good are they individually?
Right.
And that, like, it becomes hard, I think, harder to evaluate it. You can't just look at, oh, well, they're winning games and he's putting up points. No, well, he's playing with other great players, too. So, okay, how does he do on his own? And that's when it comes down to just individual watching the games and scouting. I don't know if it's a... that. See, I think... No, I'm going to get...
I think with Puyar,
I'm going to get theoretical.
I mean, he's 19 years old. And
right, he's still young.
His first year playing on the smaller ice, and you know, when he did go to Bakersfield, you know, he had 28 points in 39 games, so he did what you hoped for. I mean, it is tough even for, you know, 18, 19 year olds to produce in the AHL, even if they have more talent. It's just, you know, the way that the
it's
game
a di- is yeah, it's a different there. Different game, yeah.
So I'm obviously, neither of us are writing him off by any means. I think he's you know, he's a two-way guy, and there is some offensive upside there. It's just not to the level of Dubois or, I mean, obviously Matthews and Line are in their own group, but he doesn't seem like the guy, you know, from a fantasy perspective. I'm not sure Puljujarvi will ever be better than, say, Kachuk, Keller, and Nylander, who went after him.
I don't think he will.
I don't think he will. I mean, there's definitely a chance, again, like, maybe he eventually ends up playing with McDavid and Drysdale. Yeah, so it's not impossible. But I think the other guys, their offensive upside is higher. You know, to two-way game, yeah, Puljujarvi, I mean, he's definitely better than Nylander at this point. You know, Keller, not Kachuk. Kachuk is unbelievable. But, yeah, I mean, the top of this draft is really shaping up. Who else you got on your list?
Okay, so on my list, besides Nylander and Keller, I'm gonna go to the blue line here. I have two defensemen. I have Julius Honka from Dallas and Thomas Chabot up in Ottawa. We talk about how Pittsburgh had a really bad defense corps. Outside of Erik Karlsson, Ottawa doesn't have much either. Thomas Chabot was pretty much seen as an untradeable asset, untouchable asset that the Senators had, and he looked really good in the World Juniors. It pretty much, that was essentially when it was US-Canada in that final match. It pretty much came down to Chabot versus McAvoy the entire game, because they both played like three quarters of the game. It was stupid how much they were on the ice against each other. Thomas Chabot, though, looks really good. He's been playing excellent. He's like a top flight prospect for them. I expect him to be on the Senators roster. He's already a big kid. He's like 6'3", I think. I'm sure he can easily find somewhere on like the third pairing to start off and then move up to the second pairing. Maybe in 2 years we'll find him playing with Karlsson. But I think Chabot's going to be really good. And Julius Honka, there have been reports that pretty much everyone in the Dallas organization knows that he has to be on the team next year. Like, they can't afford to keep him down in the minors any longer. He is ready. He's ready to take on big minutes, too. So if they put him with, say, Klingberg, like, how do you not love picking him up? Defensemen, we talked about all year. It was so brutal for defensemen and fantasy this year. Honka could easily be a third fantasy defenseman if he plays with Klingberg. He could be a third defenseman on your roster. I feel like he has that kind of potential
right
away, because he's going to see power play time too, probably second power play, but he's still going to see power play time. And yeah, so I'm all in on Honka next year.
Yeah, I mean, I would include Charlie McAvoy on my list too, for the same reasons, but I'm going to just, everyone knows how good he is at this point too. I guess, you know, one guy a little more under the radar that I do like quite a bit is Kyle Connor. Was a first round pick for the Jets. Played 1 year at Michigan, was an absolute monster. In 38 games, he had 35 goals, 36 assists. Had 25 goals and 19 assists in 52 games in the AHL, and while he didn't have great success in the NHL, he only had 5 points in 20 games. He was barely playing for the Jets, you know, third, fourth line. Going forward, there's opportunity for him to slide into the first line right away or second line. A top six role is certainly not out of the question. I mean, you look at who they have. Yes, Ehlers, Line A, Wheeler, Scheifele, Little. Does Matthew Perreault have to be in that spot? Not necessarily. Especially if there's an injury, Connor is the only real guy that they have that can slide up there unless they play Andrew Kopp up there again, which I don't see happening. And you know I love my Jets, and I just think it's a really good spot for Connor to produce. And while I wouldn't necessarily draft him in 12ers next year, he would be on my radar to stream right off the bat. And it wouldn't shock me if there are some stretches next year where he plays his way into being a hold.
Yeah, I actually went in a different direction. I still have two more forwards left. Okay. And all right, so I'm going to go with a more recognizable name. I'm going to go Matthew Barzal for the Islanders. Listen, they traded up to get him in one of their drafts, and this is the thing where we talked about how John Tavares, does he have any help on the way? This is the help on the way. Matthew Barzal is going to be special in this league. I am still convinced of that. I think him and Pavel Zacha are almost identical in how I feel in terms of their ability to create insane. They're like Malkin light in my mind, and I just see so much potential with Barzal. Zacha can't be in this because he played on the team this year,
right?
In the NHL this year, but Barzal, like, he's ready. Like, he's ready to step in to the Islanders. He can make a difference this year. He's going to see power play time. He is that good. I expect you can get him at the end of your draft, or if you're streaming him, I love streaming him this year.
Yeah.
Then the other guy I have, and I think we kind of talked about it, how Washington's not going to be able to bring those defensemen back, and then they're forward. Like, what are they going to do to replace Justin Williams? Jakub Vrána is still in the system. He looked good when he played only a few games this year for Washington.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to be a full-time player next year, I think. And just, I think he slots right in on that second line next to Kuznetsov and looks great.
It's certainly possible. Again,
I think he, and if he plays on the second line with Kuznetsov, he's thriving. I'm just going to say right now, he's thriving. He should be owned in leagues, not just streamed.
Right.
Owned. Because Washington, we always joke around about how Washington's great in the regular season. Well, your fantasy league is in the regular season. So you know what? Maybe take advantage of that. Maybe say, you know what? The regular season for the NHL is like my fantasy hockey. Like, that's what you strive for. Who's great in the regular season? Washington. Okay, let's get some Washington players then. That's why Holtby is the number one goalie every year.
Mm-hmm.
Because he just, they win in the regular season. He plays great in the regular season.
Yeah. No, I had Barzal on my list too. Verona's a good one. The one other guy I have left, and it might still be a year away from having a real impact. It's hard to say, but a player that I really love in Dynasties is Joel Eriksson-Häck. He did really well for the Wild at the beginning of the year, and they basically loaned him back to, you know, his team over in Sweden because they didn't want to burn a year on his ELC, and he was only playing, you know, 7-8 minutes. But he looked really good when he played, and he's just a guy I really like. And like I said, it might be a year away. You know, Koivu's only got 1 year left on his deal, but given all the forward depth they have, you know, and the pay raises that these guys are going to get. Granlund is an RFA, as is Nino. You're already paying, you know, Parisi 7.5, Suter 7.5, Koivu 6.7, Pomo 5.6, Spurgeon's over 5. They got a lot of big contracts. You know, maybe Eck does find himself in a top 9 role, and that's really all he needs because the Wild really distribute their minutes evenly. So, you know, in Dynasties, he's a guy I really like. I definitely wouldn't draft him in a 12er this year because there's far from a guarantee he's even, you know, playing, let alone playing, you know, enough minutes. But long term, I think there's a ton of offensive upside there.
Yeah, I agree. Okay, what I think on the last segment we're gonna get to, well, besides the 3-point challenge, which trade was worse? All right, and this is for a crossover NBA and NHL fans, and I think it sort of rings in my mind mainly because the NBA draft lottery happened the other day, and because Phil Forsberg looks really good. So I think you guys know where this is going. All right, which trade was worse? The Boston Celtics and Brooklyn Nets trade of what was that, 2014?
That
And I'm gonna
sounds
pull.
right.
All right, I'm gonna pull up the terms of that deal. I don't think the ordering's right, but here's the terms of that deal. Boston has the option to swap picks with Brooklyn in 2017. They get their 2018 first round pick, their 2016 first round pick, which was number three overall, 2014 first overall pick, which was the least favorable of the Atlanta Hawks or the Brooklyn Nets, which ended up being the 17th pick. Gerald Wallace, Chris Humphries, Marshawn Brooks, Chris Joseph, and Keith Bogans. Four, Paul Pierce, Kevin Garnett, Jason Terry, DJ White, and a conditional second round pick if the Celtics swap first round picks, and that pick is top 45 protected. So that was the trade that was made. And let me put this in context. If you're not familiar with the players that Brooklyn traded for, Paul Pierce, Kevin Garnett, Jason Terry combined for about 150 years of like years on this planet. I think they were all like 36 or 37 or something absurd.
They're older and yeah, I mean they're in their
By saying
lowest.
old, I don't think it's doing justice. They were well beyond the primes of their career.
Right.
So, in essence, Brooklyn gave up four first round picks.
Yeah,
Three.
with swaps.
Three
Three with swaps.
with swaps, and Brooklyn ended up with the worst record in the league this year, which meant that Boston was obviously going to just swap with them. Boston finishes first in the Eastern Conference and gets the first overall pick in the draft because Brooklyn technically won the lottery. So there was that trade. I don't think Brooklyn ever made it out of what, the second round of the playoffs?
No, yeah, they lost to the Heat in five the first year, and I'm trying to see what they did the second year. I think it was the same.
Did they even make the playoffs the second year?
Well, did they end up? These guys were basically on the team for only 2 years, like. That's the worst part about it. Yeah, they made the playoffs as the 8 seed, and actually, I think they played the Hawks that year, and the Hawks were the 1 seed.
Oh, they made it seven. They made it 7 games and then lost.
Right. So, I mean, I think that trade has to be worse than it was Philip Forsberg for Martin Erat and Michael Latta, solely because Boston might end up with, three Philip Forsbergs at the end of this trade, or even better. I mean, and for those who don't know, I did a basketball podcast with Tejo on last week, and we talked about the draft. But I think Markelle Fultz has the chance to be a top 5 to 10 player in the NBA. So that alone is insane. Let alone Jaylen Brown looks great, and now they have the 2018 first still too, which Brooklyn's not getting any better. There's a real good chance it's going to be a top 5 pick again. For a trade that was just so short-sighted, it was unbelievable. The funny thing that came out to me about the Forsberg trade is someone tweeted out yesterday, and it was a George. It was someone who was involved with the Capitals at the time, and they said McPhee went to all his scouts and said and asked, like, dude, you think this is horrible, or basically, and none of them said anything. Like, how is this
How is
possible?
that possible?
So I can't completely blame McPhee. I mean, clearly he should have known better. He did a lot of good though for Washington, and that was like his one mistake. It's scary to think about, if they still had him
Could you imagine that
playing with
team?
Kuznetsov and Johansson, say on the second line, or playing, with Ovechkin and Backstrom with Oshie on the second. Like, it would be absolutely insane. I feel like there's gonna be a 30 for 30 in a couple of years of that trade and the Subban trade happening if Washington, or excuse me, if Nashville goes on to win the cup. I mean, to get Forsberg for nothing, really. I mean, no offense to Martin Erat, he was good at one point in his career, but this
thing wasn't at the time that that trade happened.
No, I mean, I'm going to look at what his stats were. That year for Nashville, he had 4 goals and 17 assists in 36 games. So he was playing around a 50-point pace. You know, the year before, he had 58 points for Nashville, which, look, 58 in 71 games, which is great. It looks to be a career high, but, I mean, so he was born in 81. At that point, he was 32, 33 years old. He ends up playing, you know, 62 regular season games and 4 playoff games for the Capitals and scores exactly 2 goals and 25 assists in 66 games. I mean, it's just absolutely horrible. And they were extremely lucky that Forsberg fell to them in the draft and ended up moving him before we played a game. And now he's arguably the best forward on a team who's arguably the favorite to win the cup at this point. It's kind of crazy. Yep. Yeah,
it is.
I think it's the worst hockey trade in a while. You know, granted, it is a prospect, and you know, it's a different animal than, you know, the Subban trade and the Taylor Hall trades, but that was just so short-sighted. But it doesn't touch this basketball one in my mind. I don't know about you, but I mean, to think that
I think if you're looking for, okay, I agree that the basketball one's probably worse, but if you're looking for what's hockey's version of the Boston-Brooklyn trade, it's got to be the Forsberg trade, because I'm remembering that playoff run by the Capitals, and Erat was a fourth liner slash healthy scratch and did
He only played 4 games in that whole playoff, so he must have been getting scratched.
Like, it was so just alarming. Like, oh my God, okay, so they gave up Phil Forsberg. What's he going to be? Washington fans better hope that he doesn't turn out to be good. Facepalm 3 years mm-hmm. later. Like, holy shit. He's actually really good.
Yeah.
He's been able to. Oh, yeah, just. No, I'm just floored. No, like,
yeah, that was the year they played the Rangers. One of the years they played the Rangers in the first round. And they end up losing in 7. Rangers won game 7, 5-0 in Washington. Just stomped them. Another massive fail for the Capitals. But yeah, I mean, it's just disgusting to think about how good that, I mean, that's enough. You know, they probably have a cup by now, Washington, if they didn't make that trade. It seems extreme to say about one player, but I mean, how do you even, the thought of their top 9 being Ovechkin, Backstrom, Oshie, Kuznetsov, Johansson, Forsberg, and then Williams, Burakovsky, and Eller is just insane. Like, how does anyone do anything about that? I don't even care about the injuries they had to Alzner and on the blue line. Like, that team arguably should have won this year, and now you're going to add, you know, a true number one forward to that team. Like, man, it's insane to think about how bad that one trade was just to set back Washington. It's hard to say set back when you've had the best record in the league 2 straight years. But again, no playoff success, and Forsberg's got 6 goals this year. He had a hat trick in the playoffs. Like, he scored consistently in the regular season and the playoffs, so he would have done wonders for Washington. And I agree. It's, again, I don't think it's on the same scale, but in the last, I don't know, 5 to 10 years, it's arguably the worst trade, just, you know, because we knew who Martin Erat was, and you just took Forsberg high in the first round. Everyone knew
he was ninth overall pick.
He fell to 11. I only remember that because he was the Sabres were one spot from getting him, and the Capitals took him. But that was the year everyone just started a massive run on defensemen in the draft, and it was kind of weird. It, you know, you look at the middle picks. Picks 4 through 10 were all defensemen, and that was with Ryan Murray going second, Griffin Reinhart, bust, Morgan Riley, Hampus Lindholm, Dumba, Derek Puyo's never panned out, Jacob Trouba, and then Slater Cuckoo, who's finally playing now, and then the forward run started. It was kind of bizarre, but Yeah, 11th pick, and they end up getting that. That was from a trade that, Washington ripped off Colorado for Varlamov, and they end up getting the 11th
Yeah.
pick. And then they end up, getting the miracle that Forsberg falls to him and then trading him away before he even plays a game. Just craziness.
Yeah, tough for Sabres fans. If Forsberg falls one more spot, they get him, but instead they drafted Mikhail Grigorenko, which,
At least they used him to get O'Reilly, so in
yeah,
that regard.
definitely a weird draft. It's something I think a lot of people like you'd find really fascinating if you just go back and look at the first round and look at where these drafts like went. Like who these teams took when they did. Like Tom Wilson, we talk about as a fourth line grit guy for Washington. He was a 16th overall pick in his draft. In that draft too.
Yeah,
Like
I mean, you see a lot of real good picks here and some laughers too. I mean, the Rangers haven't really had a first round. I don't think they've had a first round pick since, but 20th pick they got Brady Shea, who looked outstanding in the playoffs. And you look at the back end of the last 10 picks, say, of the first round, you're looking at Olimata, who hasn't developed quite as much as everyone thought. Mike Matheson looked good this year for Florida. And Shea, and then Tanner Pearson, the other six picks have done literally nothing. And the teens, all these guys have played except Scott Laughton, who's in and out and hasn't done well. But Vasilevskiy, Teravainen, Hurdle, Gergensen has been okay. Faxe is starting to come on. Forsberg, it is a pretty good draft, but there are also like some really bad misses that have hurt those teams, obviously. I mean, starting Yakupov at the top, who had an amazing rookie year too. I mean, he scored 19, 17 goals in 48 games in the lockout year, and it just all went backwards from there, unfortunately.
Yeah, it's really a lot of talent just not really put to full use. Not, or just not in the right situation. But yeah, definitely interesting to see some of these, like I still can't get over how like Vasilevskiy for Tampa sitting there at 19, Teravainen, like Chicago draft
Yeah,
pick that everyone was talking
everyone
about.
loved him, and he just kind of fell, and don't know why. And obviously, Carolina's thrilled now because they had to hear Chicago dumped him to clear Bickle's contract. But yeah, I mean, that was obviously a great pick by Bowman there. 3-point challenge. We can do. You want to do what, Thursday and Friday's games? Pick someone, or do you want to do? I don't. How do you want to do it?
Yeah, I think yeah, just pick someone from one of those two games.
Okay.
So, let's see. Pittsburgh has to win, so they might just run it up a little bit, but Ottawa is just going to go back to the 1-3-1 and slow the Pittsburgh offense down. Like Pittsburgh hasn't had an offensive explosion in this series. I don't know if I see it coming either. Anaheim, Nashville, I thought was going to be really boring. That series is a ton of fun. It's almost the inverse of what I thought these series were going to be. I thought Ottawa and Pittsburgh was going to be a shootout, but they've both realized that they have limitations on the back end, and that you have Ottawa or Anaheim and Nashville saying, we have great blue lines. We can hang our defensemen out to dry because they can make the plays. Let's just get up the ice and start scoring. And holy shit. That being said, I do like Ryan Getzlaf. I have to get 3 points. Mainly because I think Anaheim's going to win the game. John Gibson doesn't lose coming off a loss. Like, he doesn't lose two in a row. I don't expect it to start yet. I do expect that for game six, though. Pretty much I expect them to trade off the first five games and then Nashville to clinch it in the sixth. So I like Anaheim to win here. I like Ryan Getzlaf to be angry because he wasn't. He was pretty passive in game three. And it's just going to. Yeah, so I'm feeling Ryan Getzlaf here.
All right, I'm gonna go with Malkin, hoping that he finally just breaks out and takes advantage of this matchup against CC and Flynnoff. Again, I don't really expect a high scoring game in either game, but I do see the Ducks top line can cause some issues, and obviously any of these players are good enough to get 3 points. I do kind of I do think Pittsburgh, oh, they do what they can to open it up a bit more, for better or for worse. I think they just have to try to generate as much as they can. And it's so weird. Like, game two was only a 1-0 game, but man, they were outstanding, and it was the complete opposite in game three. I don't think we see either of those extremes again, but I think we're more likely to see more of game two than game three. So I'll take my chance with Malkin. Again, make your picks in the comment section, for either game. Even, if you post on there, tomorrow, and you want to pick a guy in the game on Saturday, because I'm not sure exactly what time I'm going to get this up on Thursday, so I wouldn't even be opposed to that. If it doesn't go up till 3 or 4 o'clock today, that would be my fault. So, just post what you wanted, what game it is or whatever in the comment section. The usual 5 stars, review, subscribe, all the good stuff. Anything else, read. I mean, again, the one other thing
No.
is just, again, say in the comment section what you'd like us to talk about. Saints posted, and we spent a good 15 minutes talking about it, and more than willing to do that again. So, please reach
Yeah,
out.
that actually it gives us nice material because again, there's only one game a night happening. So
Right.
the more you guys give us input on what you want us to talk about, the more we can dive into those issues and fully discuss them.
Exactly, and it'll matter. It helps us in a way too, at least me, for when I do my rankings and I look at some stuff now, I'm gonna remember it, and it's gonna make my life easier, come August when I'm putting together my ranking. So yeah, please, whatever you want to talk about, basically, outside of politics, because I don't want to deal with that anymore. It's bad enough just every day reading 4 new stories and ridiculousness. So, enjoy your weekend. Hopefully it's as nice as the weather is in Buffalo, because it's pretty gorgeous right now. And take in some hockey if you can. And we should be back early next week, probably Tuesday. So
Yep.
take it easy, everybody.
Yep, take care, everyone.